This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Guav Johnson, and he's probably going to kill me for saying this, is in my opinion probably in the top six hunters, professional hunters in Africa, period. But Guav is just like this. He's like an enigma. He's got long hair. He has cut-off sleeve shirts that he wears in the bush. He's got this boonie hat that's 10 years old that offers zero sun protection. He's a quiet, unassuming individual. But he absolutely loves wildlife. And he loves the wildlife of his home in Zimbabwe. And we were privileged enough to go and see Guav as he initiated a new project called Wilberforce, a rewilding of an area that is community-owned, that's government-owned, but nobody has the ability to actually do anything on the land and to keep other people from infringing on their community land. That's what we were there to do, to document this place, to document this project. And here's a conversation between Guav and I as we're driving around Wilberforce for the first time and just discussing the situation of a typical African wildlife conservation initiative like what he's putting in the ground. If you love this podcast, do me a favor. Give us a 5-star review on Apple. Leave us a review. The more ratings and more reviews we get, the higher we go up the charts. So just take 2 minutes, go on your phone, hit the 5 stars, write a little review, hit submit. That's all I need you to do. Cheers.
So there's a reason why I started Blood Origins. And that reason is simple, is that I wanted to convey the truth about hunting.
It brings awareness to non-hunters that it's more than just killing animals.
How do I start it? Brittany.
My name.
Does my hair look okay? It's fantastic.
My name is Mike Axelrod.
Start again.
Yeah, I hated it too.
Braxton, you said something in the car to me. You said that you were living on borrowed time.
There's a perception around who hunters are, what we're supposed to be, and a feminist that works for a non-profit that is a hunter that has only eaten wild game for the last 20 years is likely not the thing that people think about when it comes to a hunter.
I'll hit record. I might as well hit record right now.
Are these like the fling-flings?
Elephant's foot.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Are these? How long have they been in this vehicle?
2 days.
Not 2 weeks.
3 days. Yeah. Good day. Nice and salty.
There's a chip brand in South Africa called Flings. And they're incredible.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
But these are good.
Yeah.
Chicken flavored Flings. Well, Guav, welcome to the Blood Origins podcast. We're sitting waiting. What did I teach you yesterday about cameramen?
Hurry up and wait.
And what are we doing?
We're waiting whilst they're cocking around on the veranda. Double checking, triple checking, pulling wires, I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. Plus there are a bunch of poms as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. All the accent that goes with all the confusion.
Two Welshmen, one Englishman in the middle of Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Is one of them loading up?
Yeah. He looks concerned. He doesn't look like he's sure what he's doing.
Yeah, he's a newbie with us. Patrick.
Okay.
Haven't worked with him before. I'm impressed so far. I like him.
Yeah, he seems to get around. He's busy. The other two are coming now.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Yeah. He's even got his jacket sleeves off.
No, his shirt sleeves. He wanted to look like you.
Must
he
be.
Saw you this morning. He was like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
My idol.
This works, yeah.
This works. If Guav's doing it, I need to do it. And now, but he's put a vest on top of his tattered sleeve shirt.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, a sleeveless jacket.
What? We're talking about you. Yeah. It's okay. Relax. I can? Okay, but I don't.
Okay.
Listen, we know you did it because of what Guav was looking like, and you're like...
Okay.
You did have hair like Guav the last time you were in Africa.
I'm glad you're making an effort. Good.
Get in the truck, please. Let's
right,
go.
We go.
Hey, let's go.
Come on, Patrick.
Guav, introduce yourself.
All right. My name is Guav Johnson. Born and bred Zimbabwean, professional hunter.
When did you start professional hunting?
I started my apprenticeship in 96.
Okay.
And then I got my full license in 98, actually.
So 23 years, 24 years now?
Of professional hunting.
Professional
hunting.
Never did you want to grow up a professional hunter when you were a kid? Because your dad's a professional hunter, right?
Correct, yeah. It's what I wanted to do before I even started school. There was never any desire to be a policeman or a fire engine driver or anything like that. It was always just hunting.
Hunting, was it, hey?
Yeah, there was no question ever as to what I was going to be doing.
And so where have you hunted? Maybe a better question is where have you have not hunted, but where have you hunted?
Obviously Zimbabwe, Cameroon, North America, a little bit in South America, France, Germany, Luxembourg.
Luxembourg? What did you shoot in? Were you guiding or you
no,
were
no,
hunting?
I was hunting, just roe deer, wild boar, that kind of stuff. Where else? Yeah, those are the main two African countries have been Zimbabwe and
Cameroon.
North and South Cameroon, yeah.
That's where you focus professionally with clients.
Yes, yeah.
And here in Zim, you hunt where?
We have a concession in the northwest of Zimbabwe, Metetsi Unit 2. And neighboring that, we have most of the quota in the Kazuma Forest as well.
You own Metetsi?
We lease it from National Parks. It's on a lease agreement.
And how long is that lease agreement typically?
It varies from concession to concession. We have 10 years there.
10 years, and how long have you been? Have you multiple 10 years, or this is your first 10 years there?
This is our first 10 years there. I hunted there a lot as a freelancer in the past. I first started hunting there in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
So
who had the concession before you?
At that time, the concession there was Enos Dube, but it was run by Inyati Hunters at that time.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so when the concession came up for retender, how did that work? Were they not interested, or you were like, I'm going into competition with you?
Okay, so from Inyati Hunters days, it actually, the wildlife department took the area back for themselves.
Oh, okay.
And they had a South African agent bringing clients there.
How'd that work?
It didn't work so well. They didn't have a lot of clients. They didn't do any development in the area. And at that time, we were doing a lot of hunting right next door in the Kazuma Forest. So we put forward a proposal to National Parks, and when the their agreement expired with the South African agent, we went into a JV with National Parks, whereby we would do certain developments and have control of the entire quota.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So, I remember you talking last night, maybe the night before with Court, and you... And I think this will blow people's minds, because I think, again, people's expectations of people like yourself working on a concession in Africa is that you get given a quota, 3 leopard, right?
Yes, we have
50 elephant or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I guess the misconception is that you guys always overshoot your quota. Is that once you shoot your quota, you can go back to the government and go, hey, give us another elephant tag. We'll give you a little bit of money and take the tag.
No. You can, if for example, you're in an area that has a lot more elephant than it should have, and you honestly feel that, for example, 5 elephant bulls is way under what you could harvest out of that area without causing any disturbance or any destruction to the population,
mm-hmm.
you can apply to national parks for an extra elephant the following season.
Okay. The following season, not that season.
You can apply that season. I don't know of. I haven't personally had done that and had it issued, but definitely the quota setting meetings are in October every year. So that is when you plead your case. You go to the quota meeting, which is attended by various safari operators from that region and the Wildlife Department, National Parks authorities, and you can plead your case at that meeting. And then you also submit it in writing as to why you feel you should get 2 lions on quota as opposed to 1 or more water buck or whatever. And then they will be the ones who will decide whether or not to increase your quota, keep it the same, or even cut your quota.
But what you and Court were telling me the other night was that you're actually on the other side of the scale. In that you're like, hey, we get given 3 leopards.
Yes,
and
we feel
that is a detriment to...
Yes, you know, in the past... Like back in the day when I was hunting as a freelance, there were 4 leopard on quota every year in Unit 2. And most years, those 4 leopard would be shot.
Yeah.
But we feel that that is too much. And we have 3 leopards on quota, which we still feel is not ideal.
Mm.
So we go with 2 a year.
Mm.
If we see that we have, you know, a lot of big males around, then we can always try for 3 the following year. But, you know, we don't go by exactly the quotas that are issued. Buffalo, for example, I think we have 14 on quota, but in our opinion, that is too many. And we've told National Parks that, but we just don't shoot those 14. This year, we shot 7.
Guav, how prevalent is that mentality?
Unfortunately, I think, to be honest, a lot of the hunting operators, it's a business.
Right.
And if anything, they fight for more quota.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, to be perfectly honest with you, a lot of areas have quotas that are beyond what they should have.
How do we... Because I thought that was going to be your answer, right? Because it may... Again, taking the emotion out of it, taking some sort of value out of it, if you just look at it purely as an economic endeavor,
yeah,
then that makes sense, right?
Yes.
But if you take it that it's not just a pure economic endeavor, which it sounds like the way that you guys approach it, then you can go under quota. So then how do you create that under quota sustaining wildlife model? Is it raising the price on the animal, that i.e. doubling what, you know, you said you have 14 buffalo, you only shoot 7. Maybe it's the other operator saying, well, we'll just double the cost of the buffalo. Or is it not just that simple?
It's not that simple. You know, our wildlife department is always short of funds.
Mm.
A kudu crossed the road there. So some of the time these quotas are not reviewed often enough. I think really what needs to happen in our areas, it would be good to do 2 aerial surveys, for example, on the buffalo. Do a game count at the beginning of the dry season, say in June or July, and then do another one at the end of the year, say in October, and actually get a very accurate number of how many buffalo there are and set the quota accordingly.
How are they setting the quotas now?
Yeah, the quotas haven't changed too much in many years. Every year there is a game count in Wangi National Park and some of the other surrounding parks like Kazuma Pan.
Right.
But a lot of the buffalo in Metetsi, for example, don't go into those parks. A lot of them stay in the hunting, are resident in the Metetsi blocks.
Are there communities in the Metetsi block?
Not in the units. So people often confuse Metetsi because that whole region falls under the Metetsi National Parks Office. But there's actually private land that falls under Metetsi, which were old cattle ranches. So those are ranches that have been resettled. There are there's villages, huts, people, goats, chickens, cattle, a lot of poaching. And that is not the true, what we refer to as the true Metetsi. The true safari Metetsi are the hunting units, which are units 1 to 6. Unit 7 is now a photographic area.
Gotcha. And those have not changed in...
No, those were declared safari areas, if I'm not wrong, in the late 60s, early 70s. The government of the day, their opinion was that it wasn't viable to do cattle ranching there. It definitely wasn't viable to do crops, and the soil, the rainfall, and obviously the numbers of elephants, and then the predators were an issue with cattle. So they offered those landowners that owned those Metetsi farms in those days land elsewhere that was better suited for farming. Mm-hmm. And they turned those over into hunting concessions, which was a very wise thing
sure.
to do.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially from, as you said, land use perspective. What are you going to use the land for? You can't use the land for cattle.
No.
Can't use the land for growing crops.
Yeah.
So you said out of the six, there's 7 units. One of the 7 units is a photographic unit.
It used to be hunting, and it was turned to photographic about 20 years, just over 20 years ago.
Does it do just as well as Wangi? How does that compete?
I actually don't know the figures on how they do in Unit 7 with the photographics.
It's still operational today.
It's changed hands a lot of times, but yes, there is a lodge there. I believe the lodge is first class. It's on the banks of the Zambezi River.
Yeah. Well, it'd have to be, right, to compete.
Yeah, sure.
Does Wangi have private lodges inside of it?
Wangi National Park has some National Park government lodges, but there are some private concessions within the national parks that are held by companies that have a lease agreement to have exclusive use of that particular concession within the park.
And they've built their lodges?
They're not permanent camps. They're semi-permanent. In other words, they can be...
like tented camps, yes, kind of thing. They can be torn down, moved around, kind of thing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I think a lot of people struggle with... again, if they're against hunting, they're like, well, there must be something else that you can do in these areas other than hunting.
No, not really. There's a lot of areas that there is nothing else you can do. You can't cattle ranch. The areas are too vast and not suitable for photographics. The wildlife numbers may not be in the density that you need it to be for photographics. The bush is too thick, too remote, long distances from airports, towns.
Sounds like you just described where we were driving right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So where are we driving right now?
So we're going to go up and check a trail camera where we have a bait, trying to get an idea of what leopard are moving on in the area at the moment. It rained yesterday, so our drags would have been washed away, but you never know if a leopard passed close by, which it did 2 days before. I saw a leopard track in that exact spot. So
you're rewilding this place.
Yes.
This place is now, hopefully destined to be hunted in the future as wildlife game densities increase.
Correct.
What was here before you guys got here?
Very little. It's a kind of a communal grazing area. There were community members that have grazing rights to this land here, but as there's no fences, no water troughs,
was that
no
one of your
control,
brand new fences that you put up over there?
Yes, we're going to come back there later. It was just an open area where anybody could drive their livestock in, so it was heavily overgrazed, heavily poached. So there was very little here.
Excuse me.
So, yeah, but in the last 3 years with our anti-poaching, opening up the area, putting in some cattle fences and that, there's actually room now for the game. And The numbers are building up. We're starting to see more and more every year.
Is there a black sky in front of us again?
Yeah, there's rain close by, I think. Especially if it continues to be hot like this.
Yeah, pop up. Well, hopefully just pop ups, not like freaking biblical flood that we had yesterday.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this land that we're on right now, this isn't, you don't own this land. Talk a little bit about like the situation here.
So this land falls under the authority of the Rural District Council, which is government. They are in charge of this land. It's called, this piece of land is on a three-tier system, whereby there's no settlement on this land. There's not a single hut or anybody that lives here.
So is that the highest tier? You say three-tier system, what does that mean?
That means that the government owns the land, but it's solely to be used as a grazing area by selected members of a community.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not...
It's not for settlement.
No, it's not for settlement. So, the land belongs to the government, and we have an agreement with the beneficiaries from the community of this area and the local district council. So we basically are managing this area and together with the community developing it, both for the use of cattle on their section, game on our section, but the wildlife will roam on the entire piece of land, and they will benefit from the offtake of game when we get to that point.
How long have you been rewilding this place for now?
We've been doing that 3 years now.
Have you put any game on the property yet?
No, we haven't. We're actually working on the first phase of fencing. But just with the anti-poaching that we've done, the numbers have come up, I would say, by at least 80% from when we first started here.
And we've talked a lot about like why is wildlife all of a sudden growing or proliferating and sort of popping up out of nowhere?
Because now, like here, there's very little poaching. So you don't have poachers here with big packs of dog causing a lot of disturbance. You don't have illegal woodcutters in here disturbing. We don't have the huge numbers of cattle that shouldn't have been here. The only cattle that were supposed to be here were those of the community members, the beneficiaries, not the entire region. So just the lack of disturbance now has encouraged the animals to come in. They know they've got a little safe haven now. There's also more grazing and browse for them as well.
Do you think they've actually come in because they know it's less disturbance, or are they pressured outside of this area, still with poaching, still with cattle, and they sort of almost not migrated in, but just almost like, you know, transient and figured out, oh shit, none of this shit from outside, I'm going to stay here. That's
exactly
pretty cool.
Both. They found this as a safe haven, and of course, outside of where we are, it's exactly the same as it was when we first started. There is poaching around us, overgrazing, and so on. So for the wildlife, they've always had to move here because of pressure from cattle and poaching. Mm-hmm. But now they've found that, oh, this area here is actually pretty cool. There's no more chasing, with dogs and so on.
Right.
So they start to settle, and they're breeding up. Over the last 3 years, in the beginning, the biggest herd of impala I saw was 3.
Yeah.
Now we're seeing over 30 in a herd.
Wow.
And they've actually had time to breed.
Yeah.
Because those impala herds, especially this time of the year when they drop the young ones, were targeted by poachers at night with spotlights and dogs. Mm. They were easy to catch, the young impala. So it was very difficult for them to breed up. But now, over the last 3 years, they have.
What game was on the property when you first started here?
There were very low numbers of impala, kudu, zebra, duiker, stembuck, elephant passed through, and the odd leopard.
And now, 3 years later?
We have all those animals, but 3 times more. We're seeing also more klipspringer. We're also noticing that elephant are no longer migratory here. They're permanent.
Yeah.
If we go more than 3 or 4 days without seeing an elephant track, that's a long time.
Yeah.
The elephant have definitely settled here. There's a lot more elephant presence. Leopard as well. We've seen a lot of leopard activity with our trail cams. brown hyena as well.
And a warthog now.
First sighting of a warthog in 3 years, a week ago, 2 weeks ago. So that's quite exciting. They used to exist here, but poaching actually wiped them out. But yeah, we found one survivor.
And what do you hope to bring here? Like, what would you introduce here?
We would like to bring in some Plains game that originally existed here before the poaching took its toll. So we would like to bring in waterbuck, wildebeest, eland, giraffe. Nyala didn't occur right here, but they will do well in this terrain, in these kopjes and in the thickets. So we'd also want to bring in nyala and then also reintroduce bushbuck. Yeah.
It'd be nice with all those animals in here.
Yes. It'll be good hunting, plus the elephant, plus, you know, the leopard here are very, very big in size for some reason. They're renowned for being very, very big cats here.
What are they preying on right now? Like, what would be what would leopards be preying on?
You know, leopards can live on almost anything. But on the farm here, we've found kills of klipspringer, duiker, impala, baboon. They also do kill livestock. They'll kill young donkeys, weaners, calves. But they can survive on guinea fowl, monkeys, scrub hares. We have a lot of rock hyraxes in these kopjes as well, which can make up a large portion of their diet. But yeah, big cats, yeah.
Yeah, we're just making our way through the property to some sites that we baited yesterday to see what we would catch on trail camera. And as you said, freaking biblical rains yesterday and washed away, well, we think it washed away all the scent, and who knows if we got anything on trail cameras.
Yeah, something passed close by. Hyena.
Yeah.
They come to a lot of the baits, yeah, brown hyenas, jackal.
So when do you think you'll be, this is year three, when do you think you'll start selling hunts?
So next year we plan to sell at least one elephant hunt and a leopard hunt. So it'll be two. Possibly two elephant, one leopard. And then on the leopard hunt, we'll shoot a zebra or two, a couple of impala for bait. But that's about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, as each year goes on and the numbers increase, we'll slowly increase the quotas.
And you plan to bring in game? When do you start? As soon as the fence is up, right?
Yes. The first wildlife we have planned to arrive is in end of March next year, and that'll be a herd of 30 Livingston eland.
Where would they be coming from, Gwaf?
So my cousin fortunately has some friends that had a property in the northeast of the country, and I don't know if they have to relocate or... but they were looking for a good place to have these eland released, so they've actually donated them to us. We're just paying for the capture and transport, which is huge, because that would have been quite a packet to buy
a herd of
30 eland with
for
a couple
sure.
of bulls inside.
For sure.
So those will be the very first animals introduced here, reintroduced.
So, you know, one of the things that we get hit with a lot is the idea that, you know, you're coming in here, you've got this relationship with this community, you're going to sell a leopard hunt, you know, that's a very expensive hunt. You're going to sell two elephant hunts, those are very expensive hunts. And, you know, Guav, you're just making a shit ton of money from hunting those three things.
I wish I was. No, I'll actually make very little out of it. The idea of, you know, starting off with these hunts is to help fund the anti-poaching and building this property back up to what it could be. So that's, you know, really why we have to take care of the game here, and, you know, not just the plains game. And, you know, a lot of people look at the elephant in this region as just destruction.
Problems.
You know, they pull up pipelines, they destroy reservoirs, they chase people, they kill the odd herd boy, raid crops. They can be a menace, but for us, you
just
know, we protect
elephant dung on the road.
Yeah. We protect these elephants, and if we can take off one or two bulls a year and the money is generated from that, put it back into developing the property. We can't just keep digging into our pockets to fund everything here. We're working people.
Sure. What have you invested in the property already or with the community?
So far, we've invested about $100,000. into the community.
This is the bait, the third bait site, right?
Yeah, we're just gonna park about 50 meters up here.
These are all the cattle trucks from yesterday, right?
Yeah. Okay, we'll park here.
We're just gonna hit pause, then we'll get back to the podcast. Check out this bait trail camera. Yeah, we got everyone. So we were talking about the investments that you've made in here already, with no zero hunting revenue.
Yeah, no, we haven't got anything back from here at this point. It's just been input.
What are the inputs that you've put in?
Hell of a lot of time.
I think everyone forgets about time being a cost, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, to start off with, we didn't even have a base here. Mm-hmm. And we had a shell of an old homestead. No running water, no electricity, no shelter, nothing. So the first 2.5 years, we kind of lived out of little army surplus pup tents. The major investments so far are the drilling of 3 boreholes. One of them is equipped with a solar system. The other 2 are hand pumps. The wire to start the fencing has been a very big expense. The wire, the metal standards stays.
The wire and the stands for what?
To fence off the perimeter. Both into we're putting in some cattle paddocks.
Yeah, cattle paddocks.
And then our idea is to eventually encircle the whole area with a 1.8 electric fence.
But it's an ingenious design. People think about high fencing and you're sort of fencing everything out and keeping everything in. But there's actual gaps in the electric fencing that you guys are designing.
Yes. So on our eastern side, that's where most of the elephant activity comes from. There's well-used elephant paths and routes that the elephants use to come through, feeding in the area down to a big dam that we have, and then they feed back and so on. So we don't want to stop the movement of the elephant. So we are electrifying the fence, but
you don't want the elephants just breaking your fences all the time.
No, I mean I showed you those cattle fences that we've been using to try and keep other cattle out, and the guys can't even keep up. The elephants are breaking it so often. Mm. But the idea is to get the entire property electrified, and then we leave gaps where the elephant paths are with cattle grids. So we'll still keep in the wildlife, keep cattle in or out, depending if whether they're community cattle or stray cattle.
Right.
And then predators and elephant can cross those grids in and out as they feel.
So you're keeping the valuable wildlife inside. You're keeping community cattle that have been given rights to graze inside in certain grazing paddocks.
Correct.
And it's a dove. Looks like an animal running through. But also, very importantly, is keeping cattle from people that aren't even the communities.
Yes.
Out.
Exactly. Because that's, you know, that, for example, the community own about 120 head of cattle. But without any fences, there would be over 500 head of cattle on here.
Mm.
So it was overgrazed every single season.
And you said also that like their traditions and culture won't allow them to like follow up with whoever's cattle is not doesn't belong there and say, hey, get your cattle off out of here.
Yeah, one of the community members may have a neighbor that's got 50 cattle that are grazing on here, but he would never be able to approach that neighbor and say, look, your cattle should not be on our property. You need to get them off. It just doesn't work like that in their communities. However, if I employ someone from that community and his job is security, he can now get those cattle off and report who the culprit is that's pushing the cattle onto the property.
Yeah. These little patches of green grass that we're seeing here probably would not have been here 2 months ago, huh?
No. This was very dry. Even the leaves on the Mapanis.
All brown.
Yeah, they were brown. It looked pretty desolate here. This is one of the elephant gaps right here on the corner. So you can I mean, you can see all the broken trees here.
Sure. From
elephant. They like to feed along
sure.
this path here that we've left.
Like and the cattle grid, is it going to be your classic, that metal, big metal or concrete? I think I saw concrete.
Concrete, yeah. So, you know, I've seen where elephants have walked over various grids here without any problem. So mm-hmm. I don't see that being an issue for them. What we'll do is we'll clear the paths nicely on either side of the grid going about 200 meters. And we'll spread a lot of elephant dung along the path and over those grids so that any elephant coming along will smell elephant activity and
realize that one of his brothers or sisters yeah. has gone through the fence and it's no problems.
You know, won't feel, you know, suspicious or threatened by it.
It's funny that nothing like it's almost like you're seeking the balance that you're looking for, right?
Yeah, you know, we didn't want to change it up too much. I mean, to have natural occurring wild elephant on a property is a big
pretty
thing.
Pretty cool, yeah.
You know, to fence those out would seem a hell of a waste. Mm. And, you know, they've come here and they've been here for years, so let's try and keep it that way.
And it also is, if you ever get to a point where your elephant population is too big, it's almost like emigration routes that...
Yes, exactly. If the food is short or whatever, yeah. they can just move out as they need. Yeah, they don't have to. If they need water, whatever, they can come into the property. Even if they're not feeding a lot, they can come and drink and leave.
Mm-hmm.
But they do. There's a lot of ideal terrain here for elephant. There's rivers with thick acacia along it. The base of some of these big mountains has got a lot of acacia that they like. And there's, you know, thickets which they feel secure in. So, mm-hmm. they like to come and rest up in these areas.
What would you, if you look back, if, you know, in 5 years' time we came back, and hopefully we do, and we're sitting here with you on the stoop of that mountain that the farmstead, or what if you want to call it a farmstead.
The old homestead
now that has running water, no electricity still, I'm sleeping in a tent, you're sleeping in a tent.
Yeah.
What does success look like to you?
One day it'll probably be to have a roof on the house.
That would be successful. You
know, that's
that would be.
Probably just have some solar lighting. You know, we don't need anything overboard. You know, mm-hmm. just to be able to sit comfortably
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
To have all the, you know, our perimeter fence done. To have all those different species of wildlife reintroduced and the ones that are here increasing in number. To a point where we can do a couple of safaris a year to support the whole program. Mm-hmm. You know. The idea is not to come here and get rich. We're never going to make tons of money off this property.
Yeah.
But just the goal is to have a lifestyle that we can enjoy. What we love is wildlife and hunting. So to live that lifestyle
yeah.
and not have to strain ourselves to pay the wages at the end of the month. If we can pay our bills and exist here with the wildlife and our hunting, that's the goal.
And you said one, you know, one animal a month, essentially, meat provision to the community, so that meat is
yes.
essentially now a standard part of their life.
Yeah, exactly, because, you know, cattle that the community have, that's an investment. It's kind of like you having a vehicle. You know, mm-hmm. they don't kill a cow to eat unless it's a wedding celebration or something like that. So they get very little red meat to actually eat. Except on special occasions. So now, with the wildlife numbers building up, if we can provide them with meat on a regular basis, that'll change their whole lives.
Mm-hmm.
We harvested an elephant this year for meat for the communities, and yeah, if you could have seen their faces, they were overjoyed. And I can even take you back to where we hunted the elephant. You wouldn't even know there was an elephant lying there.
No bones, no ribs.
Nothing. They took every bone, rib, the intestines, the stomach linings, the internal organs. Absolutely everything was taken.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people would say, nobody eats elephant and you're just shooting it for its ivory.
Nah, gee, people here love elephant meat.
They do. Like we were talking to Washima this morning.
Yes.
And he told me it was ridiculously delicious.
Yeah. No.
He relished it. He relishes elephant meat.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with it. they'll eat some of it fresh, and the other stuff they'll dry. Salted or dried, yeah, like a kind
dried
of
meat
kind
jerky.
Of biltong. Yeah, they don't have refrigeration out where they are, so it lasts that way.
Yeah. Well, it's a fascinating place, man, and I am privileged to... We've been talking about this for like 18 months.
Yeah, nice to have
I'm
you
glad
guys
to be here. We're the first guests. That's an accomplishment to itself.
Yeah, yeah, you are. Thanks. Yeah,
you and Blowvest have rolled out the red carpet.
Yeah. Most people hear about the snakes and scorpions and how we live up here, and they kind of shy away from coming to visit, unless it's a day trip.
Yeah, and there's lots of snakes, lots of scorpions.
Yeah.
But it's paradise, man. This is Africa. Wild Africa.
Yep.
So, thanks, Guav.
Thanks, man, Robbie.
Well, that's it for today. I appreciate you listening, as always. Leave a review, share it with your friends, and most importantly, do what's right to convey the truth around hunting.
A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV